Today's episode is brought to you by the Santa Shuffle. This year's event is virtual, so run or walk anywhere you like during the weekend of Saturday, December 4th through Sunday, December 5th. Registration includes a race kit, event shirt, and medal. Funds raised through this year's event will be going directly to your local Salvation Army. Spaces are limited, so visit santashuffle.ca to learn more and register today. Hey listeners, Kate here. Today, Maddie and I are kicking off the rundown with a conversation with former Canadian marathon record holder Lanny Marchant. It's been a while since Lanny was last on the running scene in a major way, and a lot's happened in that time. For a little context, in 2013, Lanny broke a 28-year-old Canadian record in the marathon, running 2 hours, 28 minutes. She went on to qualify for the 2016 Olympics in both the 10,000 meter and the marathon, but she had to petition Athletics Canada to allow her to do this double. That same year, she testified as part of the Canadian Women and Girls in Sport Parliamentary Committee and spoke extensively about the over-sexualization of female athletes. Each of these things is referenced in this episode. After 5 years of injuries and personal challenges, Lanny was the top Canadian finisher at this month's New York City Marathon, where she raced for the Release Recovery Foundation, which provides support and funds for individuals seeking treatment from addictions and substance abuse. On that note, in this episode, we discuss mental illness, eating disorders, substance abuse, and suicide. Please listen with care. And remember, if you or someone you know is suffering, you can access support through the Canada Suicide Prevention Services. Links are in our show notes. Welcome to the Shakeout Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Van Buskirk. Each week, Canadian running staff writer Maddie Kelly and I bring you the news, results, and drama from the exciting world of running. This is The Rundown. Well, I have had an embarrassment of riches in terms of my guests on the podcast lately. Maddie and I have been so lucky to be joined by so many fantastic guests, a couple of whom competed in the most recent New York City Marathon. We had Shalane Flanagan on 2 weeks ago, and this week we are joined on The Rundown by Canada's superwoman, Lanny Marchant, who just completed the New York City Marathon in 2:32:54. She was 11th overall, but this is such a beautiful story of redemption. Lanny, it is so lovely to have you on the podcast. Congratulations on your recent marathon comeback, I guess we could say, but just an extraordinary performance overall. How are you feeling?
Oh, no, thank you. I'm feeling good. I did my first little shakeout run today since the race, just 2 by 10 minutes with a 1 minute walk. So anybody who is out there that doesn't understand coming back from running after time's off, run walking, we do it even at the high end of running. So yeah, I'm feeling good. Body's feeling pretty much fully recovered. It's actually the quickest I think I've ever recovered from a marathon, which is kind of funny.
So Lanny, I think it's been 5 years, is that right? Since your last marathon, 2016 was the last time you towed the line for the full marathon.
Yeah, it was actually New York City Marathon. 2016 was my last marathon. And I've kind of talked about this before on social media and stuff, that it was that race. I went into it with pneumonia. I'd been sick off and on for 2 years with my kidney. We didn't know what was wrong, but it was that race where my body fully just said it was done. And then kind of everything else fell apart. My dad overdosed 6 to 7 weeks later. I had kidney surgery where I almost kicked it myself. And my grandma died. And then everything just kind of went downhill really quick after New York City Marathon in 2016. So regardless of what the outcome was going to be this year, in my head, I was like, I can close the circle. If I can just go and ghost bust this race and have whatever experience I can, as long as I'm happy doing it, even if I have to stop and walk or whatever, I can close this circle and this 5-year chapter of my life can be done. And I can look forward to 5+ years of things actually being in an upswing and trending in a much happier direction.
Yeah. Well, I just, like, in 2016, there's the running, not going as you wanted it to, but then there's so much other life stress that compounds on top of that. But did those two things kind of become one? Like over the last 5 years, did you have to repair your relationship with running along with probably like your heart and your body?
Yeah, because the one thing I've always been able to do, because it's not like the last 5 years have been terrible, but it's not like I've had tons of easy moments in my life, like just kind of the way I grew up, you know, getting fired in an email on my birthday on the way to Rotterdam to try and qualify for the 2012 Olympics, selling my plasma to buy groceries in law school. Like I just went down and got a bunch of dental work done this past week, because it's been 10 years with gaping holes in my mouth where I've just been so sick and my teeth just falling out of my face. So it's just been years of things being really bad, but all through those times, I was always able to just run and like escape from the bad and go for a run. This last 5 years, I couldn't. This last 5 years, my body was so broken. I had this leg that I couldn't control, and the hip surgery fixed most of it, but it didn't fix all of it. And the therapists that were working on it weren't getting it right. And it was very nervy and very much tied to my emotional state. So if I was really stressed about something, or if I was putting a lot of stress on my body in other ways, dealing with relationships, work, people, family, my leg wouldn't work, or I'd get a stress fracture on the other side. So it was just 5 years where my one solace was running, and I couldn't do it. And so then I started to loathe running, because then now something that's supposed to de-stress me is adding more stress. And it's another year where I'm not making a team. It's another year where I'm having to wonder if I'm going to lose my contract and not be able to afford to even do this sport at all. It's another year where I'm putting my hope and faith in different practitioners to fix my body, and they're not fixing my body. But all of my energy was on fixing my body, because I didn't want to look or deal with all the tragedies that kept happening. And so as much as 2020 was a really hard year for everybody, and it was really hard for me because I had just moved to Colorado and didn't know anybody, and then the world shut down and I was isolated. It was the first time where, because the world shut down, there wasn't this pressure to run to any level, because nobody could run any races anywhere. So it was an opportunity for me to just, if I wanted to run, I'd go run. And if I didn't, I didn't. And it was the first time I started to kind of allow that to be my relationship with running, that I actually, for the first time, acknowledged, I friggin' hate this sport. I hate running. I hate how it makes me feel. I'm grumpy when I have to go do it. And I wouldn't allow myself to admit that for the longest time. And so I finally did just admit, the one thing I've loved in this world has abandoned me, and I'm mad about it. And once I allowed the anger, then I could actually start to heal and repair my relationship with running, which then also let me start to heal and repair from all the different tragedies over the last 5 years.
And when did you start to turn that corner? Like, can you remember a day going for a run where you thought like, oh, I'm enjoying myself?
Yeah. Like there was some runs through like 2020. With Adriana Nelson, we'd go up to Brainerd Lake. It's like 10,000 feet elevation, and it's just like mountains and beautiful. And it's such high elevation that you can't run fast really at all. And so we're just like trotting along and chit chatting. And that was the first time I was never a person when I'd be running, somebody like, oh my God, it's so pretty. I'd be like, why the f- are you looking over there? Like, just run. It was the first time I actually like took in the environment that I was running and was actually like, this is beautiful. Oh man, I like this. And then as the world opened up and I got to do more runs with her, and then Gesa Kraus from Germany, pops in and out of here to train. So I would get to train with her, and for someone who has the accolades that she does, the kindness and the excitement she would have, just that I was like, this is the longest long run I've done in 4 years. She'd be so excited. She'd show up with like flowers and beer for me the next time I saw her. Alexi Pappas and Ali Kiefer were out here last fall. And that's where I started to realize, like, I'm not the only one having hardships. Yes, like I keep getting knocked down, and it's the first time I've had this much female energy around me. Like all the people I'm training with, they're all women. So that last fall is kind of where I started to get momentum, built it up. And then I would say the spring is where I really thought, I'm back. Whether I made the Olympic team or not, was who knew? Like it would have been a really hard thing to do, but I was willing to try. And that was the first time I was willing to try, was March and April training with Gaysa Krause again and her team, because they were out here. It was the first time I was like, you know what? I might go and put myself on the start line of these track races, the 5K and the 10Ks that were all throughout the US, and go up to the trials and just simply not be good enough to make the team. But I'm willing to risk it. I'm willing to try. And then unfortunately, finding my friend Zach in his apartment after he'd succumbed to an overdose kind of was where I went back to the, I hate this. I can't keep pushing right now. I need an actual break. And that's kind of what then the spring and summer was about. But yeah, even the few, when I started running after finding him, when I started to get back into just some easy runs, what I liked about it was I'd already decided I'm not even going to try to make the team anymore. I'm only running because I want to right now. And there was days where I would only run 3K, if that. And I was like, you know what? It got me out of my apartment. It gave me 15 minutes where I'm not ugly crying. Like, I'll take it and just rebuild running from there. And I would say this is, even though I thought I was enjoying running last spring, and I thought I was enjoying running when I went up with Adriana to Brainerd Lake, like there was these moments over through 2020 and early 2021 where I was starting to love running again. I actually now, being on, you know, 6 months removed from finding Zach and getting back into running again and again, the constant restart, this is the most like happy I am with running. And I wish that I'd had this all throughout my career. But like when I say for New York, I didn't know what I was going to do. And people ask, what's up next? And I say, I don't know. I'm going to just keep doing what I've been doing. And that's just been, if it's a day and I want to run, do it. And if it's a day where I don't even try to talk myself into it. The trick used to be you put on your running clothes, you'll get yourself out the door and you'll go. If the thought of running makes me feel any stress at all, I just don't do it anymore. I might go do a CrossFit workout or rollerblade or swim or take my dog for a walk, or I might just see like what new Netflix series is on. I'm not forcing it at all anymore. And that's actually made me really love it again.
Lani, you've shared so many powerful things there. And I want to come back to a couple things. I want to come back to the sense of female empowerment that you felt with your training partners, because I know that that was a big focus of yours heading into this New York City Marathon. And I want to talk more about kind of just like finding that joy in running again and your buildup and everything. But to whatever degree you're comfortable, maybe you can give us, because there have been a pretty extraordinary number of both physical and mental emotional barriers that you faced in this last 5 years. If you could give us a snapshot of kind of the overview of what that chronology has looked like for the last 5 years, I think it might provide a little context for our listeners to understand where you've come from and how far you've come during that time.
Yeah. The Olympic year was the Olympic year, and it wasn't smooth, as we remember the petitions for me to be able to do both events. Like, so something that was supposed to be the highlight of my career was already kind of marred and scarred over with some sour experiences. I still loved my Olympics and loved what I did there and wouldn't change it for the world. But that kind of like kicked off a few things, just because I was also really sick and we didn't know that I was that sick. I think you remember being at the training camp with me and Flagstaff, and I was so sick and I never recovered. And we just kind of like pushed it down and medded me up, and I performed as good as I was gonna at the Olympics. Like I'm actually really proud of my performances there. And then I came back and I was gonna do New York and it was gonna be this awesome thing. And then I got pneumonia. And then I moved back to Canada after that race because we wanted to figure out why I was so sick. And I thought I'd be in Canada for 3 months. And I was in Canada off and on for the next 3 years. But during that time, between Christmas and New Year's of 2016, my dad died of an overdose, and he'd been an addict my entire life. So it was sudden, unexpected, but not surprising. It's kind of how I choose to define it. And then that spring I had kidney surgery that went sideways. I ended up septic and in the hospital for 8 days recovering, which was, it's its own story. I mean, I crack jokes about it now, but I also was cracking jokes about it during it. I mean, Kate had to come help me shower. So she got to see me in all my naked, bloated glory. Because when you go septic, they flood you with fluids to keep your blood pressure up. Plus they're trying to push the poison out of you. But when your kidney's not working, you're not flushing any of the fluids out. So I think I was about 105 pounds going in. And when they flooded me with fluid, I ended up 140 pounds. And then by the time I left the hospital, because I'd been so sick and I wasn't eating, I left the hospital, I was about 95 pounds. So the swing of what my body went through. And I didn't realize what sepsis means and what that actually meant for my body for years to come. That suit the a couple weeks after I got out of the hospital, my grandma did die. She died on Father's Day. It was my dad's mom. She died on Father's Day that first year, not having my dad. And then we get into 2018 and I have hip surgery to repair a bone spur, hip impingement and labral tear. And that was to try and fix whatever was wrong with my leg. Like I'd been told it was a dystonia. I'd been told it was MS. Like we were navigating all these things. It's a symptom of a migraine. Like it's tied to what it's tied to your sepsis. Like it was all these things I was trying to navigate and still try and compete at or train at a high level. So I had the hip surgery in 2018, 2019. I had endometriosis surgery, which was its own thing. It was 10 years of trying to get doctors to listen to me and believe me. My symptoms were really bad. It really started to affect my mental health. I would be myself for a few days of the month, and then I would just become more and more irrational and more self-hating. And I would bloat. Part of it was I've been very open about my eating disorder. You're always in recovery with an eating disorder. So when you have something going on with your body that like for no reason, you're putting on 10 pounds for half the month, and then you're back to your normal size and it's just nothing fits the way you want it to fit. And you just get, and I can't run the way I want to run. So I can't even like go get decompressed. It was just this awful thing. So we do the endometriosis surgery in 2019. And the weird thing is that all three of my surgeries were the same exact week in May every year. So it was everyone else is gearing up for a spring season and I'm gearing up for surgery after surgery. I didn't really realize how much that affected me until 2020 came around. And we did get hit with the pandemic, obviously, which was tough. I was isolated from my family. I was living alone in Colorado. It was just me and my dog. It wasn't until that same week in 2020 came around, that middle of May week, and I wasn't having surgery, that I went, oh my goodness, like, I don't have to risk going into a hospital. I don't have to risk going septic. I don't have to spend all my money on the surgeries. Like I don't have to gear up. I get to just run through the spring like a normal human. And then through 2020, things are obviously the pandemic is probably the biggest part of that. It was just awful being so isolated and not knowing when and if I'd see family or good friends again. But I would say because I've always worked remotely and I've always been a loner and trained mostly on my own, a lot of the adverse effects other people felt with the pandemic, being stuck at home, being remote, those kind of things didn't affect me. It was kind of like, well, welcome to it, guys. I've been doing this for 7 years. But then with 2021, everything seemed like it was on an uptick. The world was opening back up. The Olympics were going to be on. And then I made a new friend. I had just moved from Boulder to Denver and I made a new friend in my complex and we became pretty quick, fast friends. I knew what it was like to be like stuck at a computer. He had a dog, so I'd offer to walk his dog. We'd walk our dogs together. We cooked a bunch together, which was really helpful for me. Again, food is always kind of something that I struggle with when I am very stressed or isolated. And so we cooked a lot of our meals together. And then there was a couple of days where I didn't hear from him and that seemed strange. And so I'd met his sister, we'd all worked out, we'd done some HIIT workouts at the gym and stuff. So she texted asking me if I'd heard from him and I was like, well, actually I haven't, but like I'm about to nip out for a run. I'll go check on him. was the most awful day, I think, of my life to date. I wouldn't wish that experience on my worst enemy. I didn't realize since then, I realized like I had to mourn the loss of my friend, and my preference would have been just to be sad that my friend was gone. I didn't realize how much work I had to do, and I'm still doing, to get over the trauma of that morning, of how it all played out, about being nervous for the workout I was going to go do. I was hormonal, so I was feeling, as much as the endometriosis surgery helped, it doesn't cure you. So I was still hormonal and not feeling like myself. And it was only those reasons that I was kind of like lagging behind and hadn't left for the run yet. And that's why I got the text from the sister and why I went in. And that's what I was saying earlier, that I'd already repaired a lot of my relationship with running, and then seeing what I saw in there and knowing the hurt that he must have had to want to use drugs. And it wasn't purposeful. It was an accidental overdose, but I know those dark moments. I just handle them differently. And I remember right after the Olympics, actually, I forgot this one, when Chris Lepick took his own life, and how much that hurt me. And then knowing my dad used and constantly used, and he succumbed to it. And then now Zachary, the thing for me, I think that hits me so hard with all those people and anyone that's suffering is, and I keep using this analogy of treading water, is I don't know what it is in me that allows me to go, today sucked. Tomorrow it has to be a little bit better. It cannot suck this bad again tomorrow. And even if it does suck tomorrow, I still tell myself it will be a bit better the next day. And I don't know why there's those of us that can do that. And then there's the Lepics and my dad and the Zachs that can't. And so it always like hits me so hard when you just, there's this sadness there. And so that hit me. I was still in the apartment with him when that just crushed over me. It took about 2-3 weeks before I was like willing to try and run at least daily. I found a really great counselor. So he worked me up to running. I got back into some really good eating. I made friends with Carmen Graves and her husband, Sean, and she's a steeplechaser. She went to the US trials in steeplechase, and they just were so kind and they would message and just be like, hey, we're running. At this time, we're going to meet here if you want to come. And then Edna Kiplagat did the same thing. Edna trains in Boulder. Grace is her training mate. Grace was 9th in New York, had a huge breakthrough race. It was amazing to see. They did the same thing. They just would text and be like, we're running at this time if you'd like to join. So there's a lot of healing that was able to happen without me necessarily seeking out anything to heal. It was just these really terrible circumstances, the compounded effect of like my dad being found literally the same way, not by anyone in the family, but to find Zachary that way, just so much loss and so much work to get my body ready. And we did it. My body was as ready as it was going to be. Whether, again, making the team, who knows? That morning in Zach's apartment is when my brain finally went, you can't control any of this. Like what, like just relax, step off the gas pedal. Like you fought so hard to get to go do this workout today. And look what, this is completely out of your control. Like wave after wave after wave, that this one just washed me under and I had to come and try and break surface again. And so the eating thing got really bad again after that. And that was probably the bigger struggle through October. It was just, at that point I'd already talked to Release Recovery and that I wanted to run for that foundation. So I knew I was going to do the marathon. I knew I was running-ish to cover the distance. But the big problem was, can I fuel myself to get to the start line? And so I think the best part of New York for me is that the carb loading was probably the first week of like regular meals that I had had in about six weeks or so. So everyone, I usually hate carb loading, but I was like, you know what? Like, I'm actually really proud of myself that I'm seeking out food to put it in my body. And then, yeah, then the race was surprisingly fun and went way better than I thought it would, especially considering everything that happened in the last 5 years.
I was going to ask you about the buildup and everything, and you've gone over a lot of that. And so a couple things come to mind. Number one is the joy that you were able to feel, again, with the women that you were training with. And it sounds like you, despite this huge amount of adversity and some real challenges, were able to get to that start line in the most positive mindset possible. So I'm curious what it felt like being on a start line again, because that's a big deal in it, like in and of itself. You talked kind of about like not really having any concrete goals other than just feeling good. And if you had to walk, you would walk, but like you were going to get there no matter what. So what did it feel like being on that start line? And then what was the energy like in New York and kind of the emotions that ran through you during that race?
So the start line was surreal. It's so strange. Maybe it's because that was the last marathon I did, but I remember so much of the 2016 New York City Marathon. Like, I even remember parts on the course. Like, I remember, like, I was chasing down Sarah Hall at this point, or like, I remembered 2016 so well, and I didn't realize that I had until I was on the start line. And I was like, I remember exactly how this felt being on the start line 5 years ago. Krista Duchesne was in the race with and Rachel Hanna, and Krista and I look at each other and we go, we haven't lined up together since the Rio Marathon, since the 2016 Olympic Marathon was the last time Krista and I were on the start line together. And we used to race each other like weekly. Like, so it was that, realizing that. And I was just like, whoa, talk about two people on the same path, and then their paths can completely take them to through different journeys of their lives. Like, she got to be third at Boston and has had these amazing performances. She ran the 50K this spring. Like, she's gone this way, and mine just kind of went, but then we end up at the same point. We end up on the start line again together. So I thought that was really cool. Another girlfriend that I have that I'm really close with is Alexi Pappas, and she was in the race. And her and I trained together last fall, and then she ended up having her hamstring surgery. So we have bought, like, we're quite close just over, you know, some of the traumas that we've had and injuries that we've had. And she's such a calming person to be around. And her mindset is always so positive that we jogged, you know, our shakeout runs the days before the race. And she was in the same boat as me. She was like, I've done enough to cover the distance. What that looks like, I will not know until the gun goes off. And so it was kind of nice having a partner in crime who we were both like, we're not posers. That we were honest with the race directors and where we were at. The race directors were like, you know what, bet, this is fine. And we didn't have that pressure of like lining up being like, I'm not, this might go really badly, and I don't want people to think I'm taking advantage of this opportunity. So we were both very honest with where we were at. And that just, it really helped me. So when the gun went off, I didn't even go with the leaders. I just kind of let that pack go. And I was like, well, you're just by yourself. Let's just see what happens. And I felt good. The first two water stations, I kind of just like waved and high-fived and came through and got my bottle. And then I realized like some of the leaders were falling off, and I was like, oh, like have fun by all means, but like, I think that you can actually like try to catch that girl. So like then like competitive Lanny kind of started to come out, and I was very aware of how my body felt. Nothing was hurting. Everything, it felt ridiculously easy. And no, I wasn't running 2:28 pace or, you know, new Canadian record pace, but I was still running harder and faster than I thought I was going to be able to. And I just kind of was like, don't worry about a blow up. Just get to your next 5K bottle, get to your next 5K bottle. And I don't know if it's because I've made peace with a lot of what happened over the last 5 years. I'm working on making peace on what happened with that morning, but I've also more importantly made peace with running and that it did abandon me for a few years there and it's back now. I don't know if that's why it felt so easy. Like it just was easy. And as long as I stayed calm and didn't like get, I'm an experienced marathoner enough to know you feel good now, you will not feel good later. So I made sure that as much as I was feeling good and I could see these girls coming back, don't make the rookie mistake of running 1 kilometer crazy fast, because you're going to run the next 30 of them at a walk pace if you screw this up. Like I said, I remember so much of that course, that going through the different boroughs, like I remember going around different turns in 2016. Like a lot of it just seemed so familiar, having only ever seen that course one other time. And then when we got to about 5K to go is when my legs started to be like, honey, you only did one long run. Like you are ill prepared for this. But it wasn't like my hip. It wasn't my one side. It wasn't my kidney. It wasn't an injury. It was both legs starting to kind of tie up and cramp up. I ran the whole race with gummy bears in my hand, because that's been my like fueling hack and my eating disorder hack, is if you give me gummy bears, I'll put them in my body. And I didn't even start eating them until 5K to go. I ran the whole race with a bag of Harbor Oak gummy bears, sponsorship please. And I, with 2 miles to go, now you're into Central Park and it's hilly and it's already the hardest, like a hard part of the course. It's the end of a marathon. And at that point, my legs were just like, we're done. And that's where I really had to like pull from everything that's happened, all the crap, knowing I was running for my dad and for Zach and Lepic and everybody else that has stopped treading water, who's just kind of let the waves take them. That's where like the emotional part had to set in. And I had to will myself to like, I didn't care at that point. Even if I stopped and walked, I really didn't care. I still had run a great 24-mile race, if that were the case. And I'd run like so much better and I was so happy. But that part was like, you know what? Like, don't not try. Like, just because you've already given yourself the escape option of, I don't care if I walk in this race, doesn't mean you have to walk because you're cramping. Can you keep running? Can you keep treading water? Can you fight this last wave and get to the finish line? And so that was like the most painful 2 miles I think I remember running in a very long time. But the best way to finish that race was that it was a struggle. And I've always wanted a marathon where I could run and run to that point of exhaustion. And I've never had that before. So that was also like a bucket list, weird, twisted thing that I wanted to cross the finish line in a marathon, knowing there wasn't another step I could have taken.
So speaking of race day, your outfit, you had a very, very cool pair of shorts. And tell us about the Wonder Woman fit. Tell us about why you chose it, what that means to you. And, you know, will you continue to wear Wonder Woman going forward?
The beauty of not being sponsored is like, you can be like, all right, bet, what do I want to wear today? I've worn those shorts. I've had them for a few years. I've worn them for like the Pride run and like fun runs, but lining up at an elite marathon where you already don't know if you're even going to like finish in a timely manner kind of felt like old Lanny wouldn't have done it. Old Lanny would have felt like I'm showboating or I'm making a joke of it, or like, I'm not taking it seriously. Like old Lanny would have felt like you're letting people know you're not ready to run well if you show up in like quasi costume. This Lanny, this version of me, was like, F it. I love these shorts and I am wearing them. I just wore a plain black top and those shorts. I had the release recovery hat on my head. I've always loved Wonder Woman. Obviously now with the new movies, like she's become more popular, but I loved her even as a kid. Like my apartment, everyone knows I love Marilyn Monroe as well. My apartment is literally pictures and figurines and mugs of either Wonder Woman or Marilyn Monroe. I just love the strong female character. And yeah, I just wanted to have some like superhero ability in the race. Like I knew I was going to need all the help I could get. So I was trying to like manifest everything about Lanny that I always kind of felt like I had to subdue in the like the normal racing culture. I will wear them again until, if I ever get sponsored, then I'll have to just get them to make me appear. No, it was just fun to be out there on the race, having fun, dressed fun in my own way, carrying the people with me that I care about.
And just one more thing you said there, because you said like serious running culture. Like, do you think you've started to sort of parse out the difference between taking something seriously and being serious? because those are two different things, right? Like, you're not unserious about running. And that's, you didn't wear the shorts because you're unserious, but it sounds like you've been able to both take running seriously without being too serious. And I think that's an interesting dynamic in the elite running community, that people conflate those two things.
No, exactly. Like, there's a Marilyn Monroe quote that's like, I take what I do seriously, I don't take myself seriously, or something along those lines. It's either her or Audrey Hepburn that says something in that world. And I always thought I was somebody like, I never take myself seriously. I'm a huge screw up and I'm a goof and I do stupid things. But then I still would shy away from being like fully myself in the running culture. Like, I don't think we're as accepting a culture as we pretend to be sometimes. And especially, I was so ganged up on online through 2016 and early 2017 with the double-double at the Olympics, with testifying in Parliament, with writing that article about women in sport and, you know, making sure we're not judged on our bodies. Like, I've experienced the backlash of the running community, and it, because people didn't know what was going on behind the scenes. They didn't know I was sick. They didn't know my dad had just overdosed. They didn't know these things, and they still just come at you. That for me, then lining up and wearing those shorts in New York was kind of going like, I don't really care if anybody comes at me anymore. Like, just try me. I have had the world come at me. I've had life come at me. I want to be out here. And if I like being in these shorts, it doesn't mean I'm not trying to be my best self today, my best running self today. It doesn't mean I'm not going to try my best in this race, but it doesn't mean this race is the most important thing in my life right now. And that's kind of, again, going back to that morning with Zach, that's what my brain finally clicked over. And it finally went, there are way more important things at play here than trying to be an Olympian again, or trying to run a workout, or just run competitively in general. There's much bigger things at play. And if you can play while you're doing it, if you can have fun while you're doing it, then that's your golden ticket. That's how you win at whatever you're trying to do.
Given all of that context, Lani, I think, you know, on this show, we often ask people what their next big goal is. And I'm curious about that with you, if that's something you want to answer. But I also really respect that there's been a lot of lessons learned, and there's been a lot of growth, it sounds like, and there's been a different relationship that's been cultivated with running, that, you know, between yourself and running. And so I guess I'm more curious about what gets you excited about what comes next, whether that be running wise or otherwise. It sounds like you've found some peace with this sport, but, you know, maybe this opens the door for some big future goals. How do you feel about the future of running and your future in general?
Yeah, like, I don't have anything set. Like, I'm just not going to be like, I'm going to run this marathon and then this marathon and then this. Like, yes, I'm back, but I'm like back with an asterisk, and that, like, I'm back wanting to do it the way I just did it. And that is run when I want to, don't when I don't, drink copious amounts of beer, make sure that I put proper food in my body as well, make sure that I have fun, that I'm running with girls like Carmen and Alexi and Gaysa and Adriana and Grace, like Edna, like, make sure I don't start taking things so seriously again, that I say no to fun opportunities with fun people. And if that means, like, I raced a mile on the track this summer, Carmen and her husband puts on this little Twilight series, and I had said no, I didn't want to race on the track at all. And at that point, no, thank you. But Carmen texts me like middle, late afternoon, like happy hour-ish, being like, we need one more body in the race. And I had just had a bourbon lemonade. And I was just like, bet, I'll Uber, I'll be there. And I went and raced a mile on the track. I think I ran like 5:10 or something with bourbon lemonade in my belly. So, like, no, don't do stupid things all the time, but don't be afraid to go do some really stupid, funny shit, because that was fun. Like, why wouldn't I do that? And it didn't hurt me. It didn't harm me. I wasn't causing harm to anybody else. I was asked to literally be a body on the starting line. And so I did it. And so those are the things I want to do going forward with running. Is there was 5 years where it was so oppressive to think of any kind of workout or race. Like the few little 5Ks I did, it was fun to be out there, but I was out there in my official racing kit and having all these memories of Lanny past, of how fast I used to run and how good I used to be. I don't have to compare to that at all anymore. I won't line up for a marathon with a bourbon lemonade in my belly, but I can't promise I won't line up for another mile race on the track with bourbon lemonade in my belly. So that's kind of what I want to do, is just eat, drink, and be merry and run miles when I want to.
Maddie and I have spent so much of the last 6 months talking about the value of being happy as a runner. And not only, I mean, first and foremost, for the sake of the person, right? The person has to come before the athlete, but how well that has translated in our experiences into being the better version of an athlete as well. And it's really lovely, Lanny, to hear you talk about that, I guess, unlocking of that part of yourself as well. So thank you so much for sharing yourself so candidly with us. I know it's not easy to do. We really appreciate you being so honest about who you are and what your story's been.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for letting me talk about it.
Well, it is always great to chat with Lanny, and we have some more chatting to do now about what happened in the world of running over the last 2 weeks. Nadia, I think we should start with the XC course because that's kind of the season we're in right now. There was some stuff that happened south of the border that we have to talk about.
The Canadians are holding it down at their NCAA regionals. Four Canadians won their respective races. First, Kaylee McCabe of Vancouver won the Mid-Atlantic region for West Virginia University and has been undefeated this season. And just before we list the others, I feel like we've done Kaylee a disservice on this podcast because she had an incredible 2021 season. And I will say that it is an oversight on our part that we have not brought it up yet. But Kaylee has run 9:32 for the steeplechase. She's 20 years old. That is just a hair off of Olympic standard. And we cannot wait to see what Kaylee does come this outdoor season, because last track season was incredible. This cross country season, she's looking like she could be a standout at NCAAs as an individual. And if she can remain injury free through the winter, that bodes for just like an astounding outdoor season, possibly even, you know, in Canadian record territory. Like, she could be up there with, you know, the Jen Lalonde, Regan Yees, Alicia Butterworth, you know, like these women who are having international steeple careers. And Kaylee, who's only 20 years old, could very well be keeping their company.
I completely agree. And again, we've talked about it in the past, but steeplechasers tend to make really excellent cross-country runners. So no surprise that Kaylee is doing as well as she is on these NCAA cross-country courses. We'll definitely come back at you guys with some results from those NCAA championships, which take place in a couple of short weeks. But in the meantime, we had three other Canadians win their regional championships. They were Kieran Lum, Ahab Al-Sandali, and Taryn O'Neill. Congratulations to all of our Canadians, because winning an NCAA regional, I don't think a lot of Canadians who aren't familiar with the American collegiate system can fully appreciate how impressive these results are. There are 9 regional championships in the NCAA, and this is kind of the middle stepping stone. So you have your conference championship, then you have your regionals, and your regionals qualify you for the NCAA finals, which frankly, I think is pretty akin to like a world junior cross country championship. I mean, stellar runners. So these runners are in great company with folks like Mo Ahmed and Justin Knight, who when they were in school, won their NCAA regionals, and of course have gone on to have incredible senior careers themselves. So congrats, Canadians, on the NCAA cross-country courses. North of the border, over the last couple of weeks, there have been several provincial cross-country championships, including Ontario, Newfoundland, and Alberta, as well as the university-level provincial championships, both the university and college level, I should say. You can find all of these results on our website, runningmagazine.ca. And of course, we'll bring you even more updates as we move into those U-Sport, NCAA, and Canadian cross-country championships all happening, Maddie, I think in the next 2.5 weeks. I mean, I can't believe we're almost done cross-country season.
We're almost done November. We're halfway there.
Wild.
Over halfway, because November is the short month. Yeah, so we are We are really in the throes of cross country championship season, and it's an exciting time. There are actually, in my mind, few things more fun to watch than a good cross country race. It is sloppy. It is gritty. It is unpredictable. There's a lot of cowbell. It really is everything I like about sports spectating in one, except the weather sucks, but actually that's sort of part of the thing. So it's fine.
Soggy. Moving on to the roads, last weekend, of course, was the New York City Marathon. This was the final World Marathon Majors event of the fall, and our Canadian women turned up. So we had Lanny Marchant, Rachel Hanna, Kate Gustafson, and Krista Duchesne representing the elites on the Canadian side.
Beyond Lanny's stellar performance, we had Rachel Hanna run 2:39.16 for 16th place. Kate Gustafson, a Canadian now living in New York, who ran 2:45.48 for 22nd, and Krista Duchesne running 2:52.56 for 40th, fifth in her age group. On the men's side, Josh Cassidy was fourth in the wheelchair division, less than a month after welcoming his first child. So congratulations to the Cassidys.
Yay!
And former Rundown co-host Shalane Flanagan, what a title, competed Project Eclipse with a 2:33.32, her fastest marathon of the six. She said it felt the best of the six. Shalane is just a cultural icon. I stand by that. What a cool project. What an incredible feat. The pictures of her wearing all six medals in the subway, like in the New York subway, are just, it's so cool. Shalane's just, there's not much to say about it beyond Shalane's an inspiration and obviously like just monstrously fit, but beyond being monstrously fit, has recovery just dialed. Like you could not do this without being so on top of your body, your fueling, your blood work, your everything. So if nothing else, I hope that Shalane writes like a recovery how-to guide after this. Like I hope she honestly takes a break from cookbooks and moves on to like, and I get that cooking is part of the recovery, but I hope she moves on to like, I'm Shalane and this is how I did something insane by taking care of my body. So I hope that, yeah, holistic recovery is her next business venture.
Oh, I would buy that book in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Shalane, you heard it here first.
Yeah. And just a quick plug, if any of you have not listened to that episode with Shalane, we will post it in the show notes, but you can go back and listen to our conversation from less than 2 weeks ago, where we talk all about her Project Eclipse heading into New York. Moving on to some other road news, this is a really interesting one, and it's been the topic of quite a bit of debate. So in women's road racing, because most road races are mixed sex categories, meaning that, of course, men and women compete in the same events, there is a women's world record, but there is also a women's only world record. And women's only races, of course, as they sound, are events where only women are competing in them. And the idea here is that often those times are very impressive, but slower than the overall world record, because with the mixed races, you technically could have men running around you for the entirety of the race. You could have rabbits the whole time. Whereas unless you are able to break the world record yourself, you cannot pace a woman to a world record. However, for the first time, the women's only 5K world record is now faster than the actual women's world record that was set in a mixed race. So Ethiopia's Dawit Sayem ran 14:39 last week at the Urban Trail Lille 5K in France to beat the previous women's world record by 4 seconds. However, 2 months ago, another Ethiopian, Sembere Teferi, set the women's only world record of 14:29 in Germany. So that means that currently the women's only world record is 10 seconds faster than the actual women's world record.
Which begs the question, Kate, this should just be called an absolute world record.
This should
take the place of the world record, because the women's only exists based on the idea that there is an advantage in running with a male pacer. So if this was done sans male pacer and it was faster than one that was done with male pacer, doesn't that negate the necessity of the women's only title?
One would think. So I think World Athletics is in a bit of an interesting spot now, because, you know, Presumably, they didn't anticipate that this would ever happen. The idea was always that women running with men would run faster than women running with just women. But that is not true. Interesting to see if they amend their criteria around what constitutes a world record. But in any case, congratulations to both Ethiopian women for their respective world records, because both are pretty darn quick times. And exciting news, the Scotiabank Blue Nose Marathon in Halifax returned this year after a hiatus due to COVID. And Dennis Malenzi of Halifax was the victor of this year's Blue Nose Marathon in 2:29:12. He won by 15 minutes, which is quite an outstanding solo performance. This was the third of his trio of maritime marathons this fall. So he ran Blue Nose. He also won the PEI Marathon and the Fredericton Marathon back in October and September, respectively. So congratulations, Dennis, and great to see some really exciting road racing returning to the maritime provinces.
100%. Moving on to the track, we have some very exciting Masters news. Julia Hawkins, who is 105 years old, nicknamed Hurricane Hawkins, is now the oldest competitive female sprinter in the world, setting the 105 plus 100 meter world record on Saturday, running 102.95 at the Louisiana Senior Games. She said she loves to run, but only took up racing when she turned 100. Anyone who's trying anything new over the age of like 40, I honestly give props to. Like, I feel like this joie de vivre is probably the reason she's still alive. Massive kudos to Julia Hawkins. The fact that she took out something new at age 100 is just so wildly impressive to me. I love that curiosity about the world and that interest in trying something new. So Julia, I don't care how fast you ran. I just love that you took up sprinting when you had entered the triple digits.
Yeah, she was interviewed after the fact, and she said a few really great things that I think we have to mention here. One was that, to your point, part of what keeps her young is trying new things. And she said, you just have to stay healthy and keep running. We should mention she is uncontested in this record because she is the only 105-year-old that we know of to ever have completed an official 100-meter sprint track race. So she set the bar. The second thing she said was that she found it really difficult to see the lines on the track because her vision isn't very good anymore. And she said, I would really like if they could paint them a little brighter, please. We could all benefit from that. And the third thing she said that I absolutely love is she wants to make this an annual tradition for herself. At 105, she has decided that annually she would like to come back every year and run this race. So Julia, you go, lady. We hope to see you back next year. Hoping to beat your previous time of 1 minute, 2 seconds, 0.95. In some very exciting Canadian news, Mr. Derek Drouin, Canadian high jumper. He was the gold Olympic medalist in 2016. He was the world champion in 2015. Had his 2012 Olympic medal upgraded from bronze to silver 9 years after the fact. So back in 2012, Russian high jumper Ivan Yukov won gold, but he was one of the 12 Russian track and field athletes eventually found guilty of state-sponsored doping back in 2019, and therefore all of his results from 2012 to 2014 have been erased, meaning that Derek now has an Olympic gold and Olympic silver medal under his belt. Really exciting, but he did say that he feels terrible for anyone who is ever deprived of a podium experience. Of course, you know, in particular, whoever comes fourth and then eventually gets upgraded to a bronze medal will never have that opportunity to stand and represent their country on a podium. So although this was a really great story for him, he did say that it makes him angry that others have been cheated out of that opportunity and is an ongoing proponent of clean sport.
So this weekend, we have U Sports later than usual in Quebec City, which means it is going to be a cold one. I have run on that course before. It is a hard course. It's at the Plains of Abraham. There is a monstrous hill that you go up 3 to 4 times, depending on how they do the circuits. It will be freezing. It will probably snow. It will be a true cross-country course. And there is no clear-cut winner, which I love. The Laval women are extremely strong this year, as are the Guelph. Guelph ladies. So that'll be an interesting matchup there. And when it comes to the men's race, we've got MAC, we've got Guelph, we've got UBC, we've got Laval. None of them have a clear-cut shot at the win. So it'll all depend on who turns up this weekend in snowy Quebec City.
Again, like you said, I love me a good cross-country showdown, and this weekend I'm sure we'll deliver in spades. So check back with us in 2 weeks' time for our next rundown for all of those results. But of course, you can always check in at runningmagazine.ca for speedy updates on these races and many more. And until then, Maddie, what else are you looking forward to?
I am looking forward to the 6K community race at Nationals. Woo!
Woo!
You know, if you're interested, let me know. I'll be there. I am excited to run my first cross-country race in 4 years.
Amazing. I'm excited for you to do that as well.
Thank you so much, Kate.
Unfortunately, I will not be joining you this year, but another time for sure.
100%.
Well, thanks as always for tuning in, listeners. For your rundown, I'm Kate.
And I'm Maddie.
And we'll be back again soon.